May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Crooks. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Zephyr Hessen. 7 years ago to this day, Zephyr Hessen was an associate looking for advancement in a big Chicago law firm, a nationwide law firm, Foley and Lardner. He was the highest biller among associates in the business law department. He had just finished a large project for an important Foley client, GMAC. He was allowed to work independently on that project, and upon the completion, he was given laudatory thanks from both the client as well as the Foley partner that had assigned him the work. 7 years from tomorrow, this country was victim of attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon in Washington. Mr. Hessen is a Muslim, and after those attacks, his life at Foley and Lardner completely changed. In direct opposition to the prior year, for the next year, he became the lowest biller in the business law department. He was never assigned any significant project of work. And despite his frequent emails asking for work, the work just did not come. Now, the defendant argues that there was a business slowdown following the attacks on the World Trade Center. The truth is that for business law associates, those associates in that department where Zephyr Hessen worked, over the next year, the average billable hours increased. The fact is that before the decision was formally made in October of 2002 to terminate Mr. Hessen, just a month before, they hired six new associates
at what level?
For that department.
They were
new entries.
And at that time, your client was at what entry? At what level?
He was a five-year associate.
Is it really relevant and probative that a firm brings on new people at an entry level, but thins ranks at the more expensive five-year level? Isn't that done fairly regularly?
Judge, I think it is important, and it is probative. The reason it's probative is because they're saying there just wasn't the work there on the one hand. And I'll get into other comments they've made. But they're saying the work is not there. The work was there. They wouldn't be hiring six new associates.
The work may have been there for first-year associates, but not for five-year associates. They may just not have needed that many people at that level.
But there's never been any evidence that that was the case. And specifically, we don't just depend on the number of associates hired and the fact that hours were up for everyone else, but there was a specific project right after the terrorist attacks. It was called the Mint Project. It was also a project for the same client, GMAC. The testimony is that armies of associates were placed on this file because there was so much work to be done. It was a finance project, and there were associates that had no finance background put on that project. Mr. Hessen had a finance background. He was sending out emails requesting work. He had done successfully work for that very same client. He had just completed that work, and yet he was given no hours on that project. Now,
if I may interrupt.
Certainly, Your Honor.
There was an intimation in your submissions to us that this argument about there not being enough work came kind of late in the day on this motion. Am I correct?
Correct.
When was this first raised?
What that references, Your Honor, is at the time he was terminated, there was a meeting at which he was terminated and reasons were given. Now, I also raised the issue of the fact that he wasn't given any documentation concerning why he was terminated, and I think we can show they lied about the existence of that documentation. But when he got it, it doesn't say anything about a lack of work. Instead, it's critical of him in terms of the quality of his work. In other words, it's a performance-based termination, they're saying, although Judge Zagel, despite his grant of summary judgment, said we did raise a factual issue regarding whether or not his performance was at an appropriate level. And so, yes, they did come late to the game with that. And the other argument they raised was they said, well, even if it's not a lack of work, the partners lost confidence in him, so the partners weren't giving him work. Well, the fact was he had just spent the last 6 or 8 months on an enormous project working independently. He was congratulated on how skillful he completed this project. The client was happy with his work. When did they lose confidence? What would be the factual basis for losing confidence?
Mr. If was there ever any statement made by the law firm that they objected to his activities after 9/11? He apparently appeared in public and made statements.
Yes, Judge.
About the situation of Muslims in the United States.
He was very much a public Muslim at this point. In fact, one thing he did was he tacked copies of articles he had written on the subject of Muslims in America to his door. And a partner came to him, Doug Hagerman, a partner at Foley, came to him and said, "Are you sure you want these on your door?" And discouraged him from having these items displayed. So I certainly view that as a partner trying to tone down the rhetoric and position himself as a Muslim.
When I read about that, is your characterization the partner was trying to be helpful or critical?
I think that partner was trying to be helpful because he knew it was not going to do Mr. Hessen
well. That's the way I read
well.
So they're talking about internal affairs within the law firm. But was there any criticism of him by the partnership for his public speech, for his activities beyond the law firm? Did that come up at all in this situation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Now, this is a mosaic case, very clearly. We feel we've developed a mosaic of a large amount of evidence, more than I can go into at this stage. But just to touch on some of the points, the first performance review he received in the spring of 2002 after 9/11 was, number one, altered after they gave it to him. And one of the key alterations was they added a criticism to him with regard to showing tact to clients. The fact is, that criticism was based on an event that had happened 2 years earlier. It had not been referenced in earlier reviews. It was stale. He was told at the time it was no big deal. But after 9/11, it shows in his review. When the case was being litigated, we were told that individual reviews were created by partners he worked with, but that those had been destroyed. Repeatedly said, no, our practice is we destroy those, we create a consensus review, and then we eliminate the individual reviews. And then a former Foley partner by the name of Paul Schaffsma testified. And he was asked about the review he had written. And although Mr. Mason, the head of the department, had testified that all the individual reviews were negative, he said he gave Mr. Hessen an outstanding review. Mr. Hessen was his go-to guy for corporate matters. He also said that, to his knowledge, such individual reviews were not destroyed. Several weeks after his testimony, lo and behold, were delivered the individual reviews, not only destroying their argument that they were routinely destroyed, but in fact, all but one of the individual reviews were positive, were laudatory, said Mr. Hessen is on track for advancement. Oddly, the one review of these individual reviews which was negative was written by a partner that Mr. Hessen had not worked for during that year. And when a consensus review was prepared, and there are procedures to do it based on these individual reviews, it was quotes, almost direct quotes, from the one sole negative review that was contained in the consensus reviews. Now,
what was that partner's position in the firm?
Paul Schaffsma?
The gentleman who wrote the negative review.
He was a member of the business law department. He was a partner in that department.
But that's all. He was not on any of the management committees?
I do not believe so. I believe he just was another partner in the department.
Is that Pfister? What's his name? What's that fellow's name? The one that didn't have any connection? Pfister or something like that, wasn't it?
Pfister, P-F-I-S-T-E-R, yes.
But, and he didn't have any, I guess, legal work contact with your client.
Correct. And just as important, Mr. Schaffsma testified that after he put in this outstanding review for Mr. Hessen, he got a call from Ed Mason, who was the head of the department, and he felt he was being intimidated into changing his review. Importantly, Mason told him, yours was the only positive review. I don't understand that. And yet we know when we got the individual reviews that, in fact, the half a dozen were very positive and only one was negative. I cited at page 24 of my brief what I termed timing plus cases, cases where timing is an issue and that there's other evidence added to the timing is sufficient to get past summary judgment. I realize my time is ending. I just want to say if you look at those cases, in each and every case, they had far less evidence than we have here raising doubts about the reasons given by the defendant for firing Mr. Hessen. We believe we provided more than sufficient mosaic to justify.
I want to ask one more question for
yes,
you.
Your Honor.
That he had jobs with two big firms before going to Foley, right?
Right.
I don't remember the time period. He seemed like approximately a year each at Seifarth and General Block, I think. Is that right?
It was
whatever the two are.
It was not General Block. It was two
whoever it was,
big firms. Yes, Judge.
So he's then over here. Did he go somewhere else after this?
After he was terminated here, eventually he found work with the federal government in SEC.
So what is there? Whatever remedy or whatever. What's the what does he want out of this?
Judge, the amount of income he has lost for a period that he was unemployed, and as Your Honors well know, government service, while it's laudatory, does not pay as well as private practice. So there's substantial lost income.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Peter Bulmer on behalf of Foley & Lardner. Good morning, Mr. Cooks. May it please the Court. I'd like to address four points quickly. First, for the first time in this case, in this appeal, and in the reply brief, the plaintiff has accused us of changing our theory of our case, when in fact the only theory of the case that's changed so far has been his. And just to illustrate the point, at pages 1 to 2, of defendant's memorandum in support of its motion for summary judgment to the district court below, we set forth a summary of our argument. At pages 7 to 8 of our brief in this court, we recite almost verbatim the same summary that we made to the district court. Our theory has not changed. On the contrary, though, plaintiff's theory has changed rather dramatically in his reply brief. Again, to illustrate, to the district court below in his response memorandum opposing summary judgment, at page 6, he has a heading styled Plaintiff's Contention. And on the next page, on page 7, he says, quote, "The evidence will show that the partners in the business law department were led by a powerful partner, George Simon." And then in the next paragraph, quote, "Hassan does not contend that all partners discriminated against him. Mason and Vecchiola opposed Hassan's termination, though they have participated in the cover-up to protect the firm. 5 Foley attorneys who provided positive reviews of Hassan's work in his last year at Foley did not discriminate against him during the review process. The other partners, including perhaps some of those who gave him good reviews, followed Simon's lead in a manner Vecchiola described as a nigger pile-on." Now, in his reply brief to this court, he suggests that rather than this being a powerful partner, George Simon, who had an anti-Muslim bias, who influenced the others, instead now, his theory appears to be that there was a conspiracy amongst some group of partners in the business law department who were biased against his client. I submit that to the extent that is his new theory, it hasn't been properly submitted. And the only theory properly before this court is whether or not George Simon was himself biased against Muslims, and particularly against plaintiff, and if he was, whether he had any singular influence over some substantial block of the other business law department partners. Now, second point I'd like to make, Your Honors, is that There, and I think this is significant, that there is no comparators, no similarly situated non-Muslim associates that plaintiff has tried to compare himself to as him being treated more harshly than them.
Well, isn't his point everybody else got enough work? He did.
Well, he doesn't identify who amongst those, quote, everybody else was similarly situated to him. Because there are associates in the business law department, as in every law firm, that have varying degrees of skill levels, varying degrees of time out of school, various specializations. Mr. Hassan himself particularly focused on mergers and acquisitions work, on deal work. There's no attempt to discriminate amongst the mass of people in the law firm to see who he's similarly situated to.
When I pressed Mr. Crooks on that, he said that everybody who had a financing background was employed on that one GMAC deal, and indeed they went out to the highways and byways and took lawyers who didn't have that background and brought them in, but left this guy hanging by his thumbs all by himself.
Well, actually,
no work. What's your reply to that?
Thank you, Judge. Actually, that is what has been said, but that's not what was testified to by the very deponent who is cited as the source to support that argument. That deponent is an associate, a former associate named John Cleary. And what Mr. Cleary testified to was that that GMAC Mint project was a big project, and in Mr. Cleary's words, he initially said that it involved armies of people. That much is correct. But what isn't correct is that nearly every associate or every associate in the department was working on it. In fact, Mr. Cleary himself, and this is in his deposition at pages 24 to 28, I believe is the portion cited. In his deposition, he himself could only identify three other associates by name who worked on it. He also, in that very deposition testimony, acknowledged that the partners who were controlling that work and making the assignments were Brian Young, a business law department, and a business law department partner, and a partner whom Mr. Hassan has stated he does not believe was biased against Muslims, and another partner, Fred Feldkamp, who also has not been accused of unlawful bias, and by the way, was also not involved in the business law department meeting. So the statements that there was a big project that everybody but Mr. Hassan worked on is simply not accurate and certainly not supported in that record, in the source cited. A kind of a related point is this notion that because billable hours across the department remained relatively strong, that somehow that's indicative that there really wasn't a crunch that caused the business law department partners to determine who was going to receive the relatively scarce work that they had. But we can't just look at gross billable hours. In fact, Mr. Hassan worked on non-business law department projects. Mr. Shasma, the partner who was just identified, is an intellectual property lawyer.
Excuse me, Mr. Bowler, but when I read this kind of material in the briefs, what my initial reaction was, maybe you can help me with this, gee, a jury ought to hear this. I mean, why? You're asking me to evaluate the business legitimacy of what went on in that law firm. I can't do that.
Actually, Judge, it's not what I'm asking. It's not what we asked Judge Zagel, and it's not what we're asking you. Under his theory of a mosaic of discrimination, he still has to tie his pieces of the mosaic to somebody against whom there's some sort of evidence of bias. You can't just say because some faceless company, the firm, has a certain amount of people who are working that therefore someone who didn't get that work is a victim of discrimination. He has to show us who was the discriminator. And here he has. He's identified below to the district court he relied on his allegation that George Simon was biased. And he relied on his allegation that George Simon had some extra power to influence his partners. That's his case. If he can't tie these pieces of his discrimination to Mr. Simon, then there's nothing to give to the jury.
Mr. Ballmer, can you speak to the other aspect of this that counsel mentioned? That was the fate of the other two Muslims who were in the business law department at that time.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll point out first, to directly answer your question, they were both let go. One was let go for performance reasons, and one was let go for, and I don't remember what the other reason, what her reason was. Both of them were let go after Mr. Hassan was terminated, and there's no evidence as to who made the decision or what went into the decision. So I would submit to you that has no relevance to this case. And if it does, I would point out that there's a Muslim who was an associate at the time in the firm who after, and now in 2006, became a partner in the firm.
In that department?
No.
With regard to the shortage of work.
Litigation department, Judge.
I'm sorry. With regard to the shortage of work, were there others let go as well?
There was nobody who was let go that I'm aware of, certainly that was testified to, in the business law department.
Because of shortage of work, which is...
Correct.
Is it quality of work or shortage of work? Where are we with
this? Thank you. It's a relative quality issue here, and that's why the lack of comparators is so critical. He was not on track for termination. This was not an associate who was being scrutinized because he was doing so poorly. But when the downturn came, and the evidence in the record, the testimony is unrefuted about that, that the deal work was a very deal poor environment. As a result, the partners who had the deals coming in looked around and had to decide, with all these mouths to feed, which are the ones I'm going to feed. And they did what people normally do. You give it to the people you believe will do the best job, the people you have the most confidence in. In relative terms, Mr. Hassan was not one of those people.
Mr. Ballmer, off the top of your head, can you recall where we would find in the record the evidence that the partnership looked at this as a relative quality of work issue? As opposed to someone who was on a dismissal track?
It's in our statement of facts in our response brief. I can't.
I'll go back and check.
I don't memorize that right here.
Having been in your position, I couldn't have remembered either.
One other question. Based on the way I read it, he was deeply involved in a big project that he finished up, I guess, shortly after 9/11. Is that right?
Two months after 9/11, yes, in November.
So I know I never was in a big firm, but oftentimes somebody gets locked into one project, spends full time on it, and it carries them for quite a while. When this project ended, was that at a time when, because he put in a lot of hours before that and had the leading ground gainer, whatever you want to call it, Is it then suddenly he's without work? It's kind of like a trial. It settles all of a sudden. Gee, what am I going to do now?
Yes.
I wonder if that's your position, that when this big project that he was working on ended, normally he would then go into another big project and everybody else had already occupied those positions.
Well.
And there weren't any.
Well, in fairness, yes and no. He was occupied on almost entirely occupied on a huge project that finally completed in November of 2011. But by that time, it was clear within the business law department that companies were no longer engaging in mergers and acquisitions. There wasn't the work coming in. So it wasn't as if, but for that project he was on, he would have automatically been assigned to something else. because somewhere in the fall of 2001, the bottom dropped out. So to answer your question as straightforwardly as I can, he was on a big project. There wasn't something for him to do immediately, but over the course of the next several months, there were more projects coming in that, again, because of the scarcity of work and the number of people looking for work, were doled out to people in whom the partners had the most confidence. And not a single one of those associates, by the way, Your Honors, to whom work was doled out, has been raised as somebody that Mr. Hahn believes he was more qualified for and still similarly situated to. Not one.
Thank you.
See, my time is up. I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you, Judge.
Very quickly, plaintiff's theory of the case has not changed. We do believe it was George Simon, a powerful partner, the individual that made the statements after 9/11, those people, referring to Muslims, shouldn't even be in this country. Now, what they're referring to when they say change of position, I'm not sure, but we did also point out that of those eight people that were in that room that purportedly made that decision to terminate Mr. Hessen, seven of them have been shown by the evidence to either have engaged in biased statements, have been involved in denying work to Mr. Hessen during the following year, Mr. Young being an example, or have fabricated allegedly bad performance to try to justify this termination.
Please continue your thought. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I just said an example of that, the key example, is Mr. Vecchiola testified at his deposition that Mr. Hessen's work was subpar, half-baked. He was shocked at the poor quality. And then lo and behold, the individual reviews come up, and he says he's on track for advancement. He worked very hard, did a fine, all-around great job on this project. A totally different picture is painted.
How about Mr. Cleary? Did he overstate the matter a little bit when he talked about armies of people?
I don't think so, Your Honor. He did say armies of people, and he meant armies of people. He no longer is in the practice of law. He lives in Indiana. He came in and gave a deposition that he could not remember the names of individual associates. I think that's something for a jury to weigh, to decide whether his testimony is accurate or not. You know, counsel says we didn't bring forward some comparators. And the fact is, and Your Honor pointed it out, with Mr. Hessen having been at two prior law firms, a five-year associate, there simply were no similarly situated people under the law.
You were proceeding under the direct method.
Exactly. Exactly right, Your Honor. And it is important to note that Mr. Young, and that's J-U-N-G, was the one that supervised Mr. Hessen on the GMAC project. He was also the one that was assigning people to the Mint project from the same firm. He knew that Mr. Hessen was liked by that client and yet gave him no work. The fact is, not only was no one else let go in that department because of financial reasons or lack of work, but there was specific testimony that we've cited in the statement of facts that indicated that there had been no economic terminations in the firm during that time period. Your Honor raised a question concerning whether or not when someone comes to the end of a large project that they sometimes, there just isn't anything there. You know, a month, 2 months, had that gone on?
Stop, but we will give you another half.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. If that had gone on for several months, sure, we'd understand. But from the day those planes hit the World Trade Center, his career was over there. He was not given any significant assignments, not in the next few months, not the following spring, not the next summer. His fate was sealed, and I would ask the court to consider all this. And, yes, a jury should hear this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel. The court will take the case under advisement.